Will you take your Bibles, please, and turn to the book of Daniel, Daniel chapter 2. This morning, I want to just deviate for a minute, yet not really deviating, because you will recall that in our studies from the book of James, James declares, if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask of God. And we looked at that last 2 weeks ago, and we want to see this morning just how one gets wisdom. And what is wisdom? One of my favorite stories is the story of D.L. Moody, who was speaking at one time at Oxford University in London, England. And Mr. Moody was a very simple man, so to speak. And one of the skeptics in the audience listened to Mr. Moody as he was speaking, and he took a sheet of paper. And he wrote one word on that sheet of paper. And the word was fool. Fool. F-O-O-L. Someone took it to Mr. Moody, and he opened it, and he saw the one word fool on the sheet of paper. And D.L. Moody said, for all my life, I have been getting letters from people who would write a long letter, but never signed their name. This time I have a letter of someone who signed his name and didn't send a letter. He was a wise man. He knew how to handle situations. Wisdom is a very practical thing. Wisdom is not liquid that God pours in us when things go wrong. Wisdom is a disposition that one has discovered in his life, in her life, which gives them the capacity to answer in a very practical way to things that happen. Whether my time will allow me to finish this morning or not, I don't know, but I'll go until the time and then finish it if needs be upon my return, Lord's willing. Now please forgive this little statement. In one of my books that I have written by R.C. Sproul, he tells of a philosopher who got up before his students and said, students, I want to make a profound statement to you this morning. And the statement is this. Whatever is, is. Now that doesn't sound like anything profound, but it is. Because at the back of the mind of the one who said that statement was this. That all things that are have always been, and there is no source for them. I want to just take that and apply it to this business of wisdom. There are wise men and wise women in the world, Christians and non-Christians. But any wise man or any wise woman gets his or her wisdom from God. God has made us with that ability. We read in Genesis chapter 11 that whatever man puts his mind to do, unless God puts a stop to it, he will be able to do it. Frightening statement, isn't it? Genesis 11, whatever he places his mind on to do will not be impossible for him unless God, as he did in chapter 11, took care of it. So we want to ask ourselves this morning, where does wisdom come from? Let's study the origin of wisdom. What's its source? What's its fountainhead? What's the foundation for it? Whatever is because God makes it so. In Genesis chapter, Daniel chapter 2, it begins this way. I want you to see verses 19 and 20. And the king talked with them. And out of them, and all of them, not one was like Daniel, Hananias, Mishael, and Azariah. So they entered into the king's personal service. And for the, I'm reading chapter 1 here, chapter 2, 19. 19. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in the night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, let the name of God be blessed forever and ever. For wisdom and power belong to him, And it is he who changes the times and the epoch, or the seasons. He removes kings and establishes kings. He gives wisdom to wise men. Wisdom belongs to him. He gives wisdom to wise men. Note, my friends, that wisdom dwells with God. Literally, when you read, wisdom and power belong to him, or as the King James says, are his, it is saying this: wisdom is the possession of God himself. God does not derive at any conclusion due to conferring with the creatures in heaven. God does not come to a conclusion having taken things through the process. God is said to be wise within himself. It belongs to him. Wisdom is his own personal possession. In Romans chapter 16 and verse 27, we read these words: "And now to the only wise God." Only wise God. Not simply that he alone is wise, but he alone stands out. He is the one solitary being that has wisdom within himself. He is the only wise God. Not any of the creatures in heaven possess the wisdom that God possesses. None of the saints who go to heaven possess the wisdom that God possesses. It is his own deity that makes him what he is. And A.W. Tozer puts it so well. He says, God's wisdom is as pure as God is eternal. And it is as eternal as God is pure. So that when we come to understand the wisdom that dwells in God, we are understanding that this is uniquely his own personal attribute apart from anything else that exists, whether it be in heaven or in earth. But we want to ask ourselves, what is this wisdom? When we say that God is wise, what do we mean? I couldn't find anything in my own mind or in any reading that helped me to understand it like the works of A.W. Tozer. Listen to what he says God's wisdom is. Wisdom, among other things in God, says Tozer, wisdom, among other things in God, is the ability to devise perfect ends and to achieve those perfect ends by perfect means. The ability to devise perfect ends and to achieve those ends by perfect means. It sees the end from the beginning so that there can be no need to guess or conjectures. Wisdom sees everything in focus, in proper relation to all, and is able to work predestined goals with flawless precision. Dr. John Murray puts it another way. Wisdom is the arrangement and the adaptation of all things for the fulfillment of God's holy purpose. God never has to second guess anything he does. God never has to improve on anything he does. God never has to say, uh-oh, never. Because God is absolute in what he does, so that by wisdom, says the scripture, he made the worlds. It was found by the wisdom of God. So we see, my friends, that wisdom existed before the creation ever came into existence. And it is not the possession of angels, not the possession of beings in heaven. It is the sole possession of God, and he distributes it as he wills. So we see that wisdom dwells in God. But then we have wisdom described in God. Wisdom described in God. Romans 11, chapter verse 33. Romans 11, 33. And Paul was moved with the sense of the wonder of God, the schemes of wisdom that God himself revealed through scriptures, that when he gets to Romans chapter 11 and verse 33, he bursts out with a doxology. Oh, the depth both of the wisdom and the knowledge of God. How unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. I want to break that down for you this morning. This wisdom that is described in God. See if you have this kind of wisdom, if you can cope with it. The first thing we find, my friends, in the wisdom of God is that it is profound. God's wisdom is profound. Oh, the depth. It is fathomless. No one can excavate the completeness of that which is God's and God's alone. Paul says it is rich. He's not talking, my friends, when you think of riches, thinking of money. But there are so many sides to the wisdom of God. It is like a rainbow with all the different colors. And at one point here, you see God's wisdom manifested here. In another point, it is manifested here. No one can fathom what the wisdom of God is. Tozer again puts it in another way. He said, except for creation, the wisdom of God would have forever been locked in his own divine nature, and we would know absolutely nothing about it. Except for creation, the wisdom of God would have been locked in the divine abyss of God's own holy nature. It is profound. And you know, as I studied that, what came to my mind? Romans 8:28. This is the kind of God who is all wise, who is able to make all things work together for good to them who love him. I wouldn't want to put my faith in a God who was not that wise, who could not take the problems and the issues of life and so orchestrate according to his own holy will to bring out on the other side with absolute precision that which he has for my life. It is designed in God as being profound. Paul could not get over it. He just added words, adjectives. Oh, the depth, both of the riches and the wisdom of God. How unsearchable are his judgment, his ways past finding out. Words multiplying to try and describe what the wisdom of God is. That's why James says, if any man lacks wisdom, let him ask God. Secondly, not only the profundity of God's wisdom, which we can see, my friends, that in this wisdom of God, Paul again in 1 Corinthians 2 says, if the wisdom of the world, the combined wisdom of the Greeks, the combined wisdom of the Romans, if they all knew the wisdom of God, they would never have crucified the Lord's Christ. If the wisdom of the world was able to penetrate into the mind and the design of the Almighty, they would have understood the incarnation from God's point of view, understood Calvary from God's point of view, and understood time from God's point of view. But the world, by their wisdom, does not know the wisdom of God. It's profound. Secondly, it is prohibitive. How unsearchable. That word is saying, my friends, that no one can, by human genius, enter into God to bring out of God that which would satisfy him. That's what the word unsearchable means. You cannot examine God. God cannot be put in a test tube using human standards to try to determine not only his existence but his ways. They're past finding out. They are unsearchable. I love philosophy. I really do. I enjoy good philosophical conversation anytime. And I usually get a kind of a secret glee in reading philosophers who are struggling with the sense of existence, and they will say, if I were God. I love that statement. My friends, if I were God, what would I do? If I were God, I'd do what God does. That's all I could do. Because God acts according to who he is. And what they're saying is this, as Charles Templeton once put it, I cannot see how a loving God could let his son die. He cannot search out the motive and the purpose of God in Calvary. It's too deep for him. As brilliant as Templeton is, his brilliance will not allow him to enter into the mind of God and to search out the wisdom behind Calvary and behind creation. I want to give you an assignment. I want you to go home this afternoon, and instead of watching, I don't know who's on this afternoon, I'd like you to read Job chapters 37, 38, and 39. Because, my friends, God challenges Job. May I just give you just a little, let me whet your appetite. I was going to just leave it, pass over it, but I don't think it'd be fair to you. Job chapter 38, I'll look at. And you look at 37, 38, and 39. Listen to God as he speaks to Job out of the whirlwind. He says to Job, Job chapter 38, then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by word without knowledge? Now gird up yourself like a man, and I will ask you, and you instruct me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who is it who sets in measurement, since you know? Or who stretched the line on it? Or what were the bases sunk? Or who laid the cornerstones? God is saying to Job, can you tell me? Out of your mind, out of your learning, Job, can you explain to me how creation came into being and how everything stands in place by fiat from the divine throne? I want you to tell me, Job, if you can. I want to challenge your mind. My ways are unsearchable. You cannot examine them to come to human conclusion or to a divine conclusion. It is prohibitive. You can only go so far. We were told about the professor of science that spoke to us a month ago at the men's breakfast. And he's a professor of science at York University. And he said, before he comes from the University of Boston, University of Washington in Seattle, Washington, and now York University. And he says, I investigated, and then I got here. And when I got here, I was stopped. I could only understand so much. And then I understood what it meant that by faith we understand. By faith we understand. Faith, my friends, is the means by which we go beyond reason. It is not unreasonable. But faith is the highest reason. Faith reasons that only God could accomplish what has been accomplished. And then we see the wisdom of God not only being profound, prohibitive, for as far as human beings are concerned, but the wisdom of God is also, my friends, peerless. Peerless. It is past finding out. You cannot go to the depth to try and discover the deepness of it. You cannot go in to understand what is happening in it, and you cannot go beyond that because it is too high for you. You cannot reach up to it. It is peerless. It stops where I am, and it is right here. It is very interesting as you think of this word past finding out. As someone has said, God works, but he never leaves footprints. God works, but he never leaves footprints. In other words, my friends, you cannot tell what God is doing. Some time ago, I was watching the 100 Huntley Street, and Ravi Zacharias was on that program. And the interviewer asked Dr. Zacharias, do you think that God is going to send a revival in our time? And the godly man that he is, Ravi said, I can't answer that. because I do not know what is behind the mind of God. I heard an interview with a former missionary who was raped and dehumanized by people in Africa. And the interviewer asked her, "What do you think God was trying to teach you in all this?" And the godly woman that she is, she said, "How can I answer that? I cannot fathom the mind of God." And there are times, friends, when the only answer to the mind of God is faith in the God who has that mind. That's the only answer. Because we cannot really see what God is doing. His ways are past finding out. As far as the heaven is above the earth, so far are my ways from your ways. My thoughts are not your thoughts. The understanding of God, says Psalm 147, verse 5, the understanding of God is infinite. Infinite. The word the theologians use, my friends, is this: the wisdom of God is transcendent. It goes beyond what you and I know about God. I will close now, but I want to make the statement that when we get to heaven, we will not exhaust our knowledge of God. We will continue to discover for all eternity the wonder of the wisdom and the majesty of God. But while we are on earth, I want to close with a very practical word out of this first part of my message this morning. And it is this, friends. We know that a God of such infinite wisdom, who can see the end from the beginning, who understands the relations to all the parts of all the experiences, that God, because he is the all and only wise God, can so work through the experiences of your lives and mine, so that at the other side of the experiences, we will rejoice in the goodness of God, and he will be glorified, because we would have experienced what Paul says in Romans 8:28, that in all things, not some things, not most things, not the majority of things, but in all things, negative and positive, in all things, God is at work for the good of those who love him, who are the called ones according to his purpose. It takes an all-wise God to be able to take the experiences that you're going through this morning, the experiences that I went through this past week, the experiences that we will go through in the time to come. It takes an all-wise God, as we have seen this morning, for us as human beings to put our faith in and then to be at peace knowing that at the end of this, God will bring about what only God can bring about.